Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Road to Recovery group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is John, and I am an alcoholic. Could everyone please turn off their mobile phones or switch them to a silent profile, and please try to keep disruptions to a minimum. Also, please don't smoke e-cigs during the meeting. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any set, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses or opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. In support of AA's singleness of purpose, we would respectfully ask that sharing be confined to alcoholics, and when discussing our problems, we confine ourselves to those problems as they relate to alcoholism. There may be visitors here who are unfamiliar with our tradition of anonymity. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and television. This tradition is a constant reminder that personal ambition has no place in AA. We assure that anonymity is the greatest safeguard AA can ever have. We therefore seek your cooperation in protecting the anonymity of our members at the public level. The format of tonight's meeting will be 7 10-minute speakers. The remainder of the meeting will then be open to the floor and closed 30 minutes later. Can we please have a moment's silence to remember Tradition 5? Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Our first three speakers tonight will be Wayne, Riekel from Bournemouth, and George from Germany.
Thanks. My name's Wayne and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Wayne.
It's great to be here. It's going to be same old, I'm afraid. If you're new, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you're at the Road to Recovery group for the first time, welcome. It's great to see you here, and if you stay here, there really is no finer place to recover than with us at this group, so it's just a great place to be. So when I was new, I was just, quite a while ago now, I was just a shivering denizen, like it says in the big book. You know, I lived in that strange world of alcoholism. Everything was exaggerated, it was distorted, and I just worried all the time, and just life was just tricky. Life was tedious. It was dull. It was boring, and I would sit in my bed, and I would drink, and you know, it was the little things that would get me all the time. You know, I would sit there, and you know, a car would go down outside, and I would just jump out my skin. You know, somebody would knock on the door, and they would slowly come up the stairs, and I would just, my knees would knock together with just terror, and I just didn't know what it was. And the only thing that would ever make that awful feeling okay would be the sense of ease and comfort which came almost immediately by taking a few drinks. And I'd take a few drinks, and all of a sudden, from being somebody that was just full of fear and just miserable and just leading a dull and tedious life, I became the person I wanted to be. I became the person that I thought you wanted me to be. And I was where the party was at. You know, things just changed instantly. And of course, I would drink too much, and I would get into trouble, and I'd do things that I desperately regretted. You know, I'd smash windows, get into fights, I'd cheat my girlfriend, and I'd do all these things. And I the next day I'd wake up and I'd just be, you know, just that awful feeling, you know, that humiliation. You know, I've done it again. You know, I've done it again, and I would promise, this is the last time. You know, I will never, ever take another drink. And I genuinely meant that was it. I was not going to do it again. But I always eventually did. I always eventually succumbed to that desire to pick up another drink, and it happened time and time again. And I tried doctors, counsellors, treatment facilities, I tried all these things, and it all availed me nothing. It had no significant effect on the quality of my life. It didn't keep me sober. Within a week, I was just pacing up and down, and I wanted to have another drink. And then I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I came to meetings like this, and I would go to meeting after meeting after meeting, and I'd tell everybody how bad I felt and how awful life was. And it would give me temporary relief. I'd get back to my bed, sit, in just that awful feeling of, oh, I've got to have another drink. You know, just to get rid of those awful feelings of just not feeling right and just life being so tedious. And I did it again and again and again. And that's how I went to these meetings. And, you know, anybody that is new, it is not enough to come to a group like this or a meeting like this and sit in amongst so many people. And it's really wonderful to see a lot of people here. It is not enough. You know, I went to meetings, I went to big meetings, and I sat in the middle and I spoke every meeting I could. I would share and I would let everybody know how bad I felt. But it had no significant effect on my life. It did not keep me sober. You know, in fact, if you come to a meeting like this or any meeting and do that over any prolonged period, my life will get significantly and progressively worse. That's what happens to a person like me. I needed to take the 12 steps. And so if you're new, just take the 12 steps. Get a sponsor, somebody that you trust, somebody that you're going to listen to. And I met these guys, and they were amazing. These guys were different. I came across these folks, and they just set the room on fire. These guys spoke with conviction. They gave me hope. You know, they told me the most satisfactory years of my existence lie ahead. And that what I was suffering from, only a spiritual experience would conquer it. I mean, in that spiritual principles would solve all of my problems. And all these things, you know, I couldn't believe it. You know, these guys were excited about Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, they had a purpose, and they were enjoying themselves. And I say, they told me to do these things, to get a sponsor, to take the steps, you know, to get involved in a home group. And they told me to do these things, and I acted on the information received. You know, I was not only listening, you know, I didn't just hear the words, I heard them sufficiently to be able to act on the information received. And I got a sponsor, and I allowed myself to be sponsored. And this guy took me through the steps. And, you know, nobody liked these people. I came across these guys, and nobody liked them. But, you know, and I did what they'd done, and I became like them. But, you know, we didn't care nobody liked us because, you know, we'd found something. You know, and I knew with absolute certainty that I needed and wanted what they had. And I had to go to any lengths to get it. And, you know, they said things like, you know, get a home group. And, you know, two of the most important things I found in 25 years of sobriety to maintain what I found have been sponsorship and being involved in an active home group. You know, being in the middle and being active and participating in a strong home group. And what I'd say, anybody that hasn't got a home group or anybody's thinking about joining a particular group, don't let the opinions of people whose sobriety you admire less stop you from joining the best group there is. This is a fine group, and there are many others like it. You know, just, you know, I would go to meetings and I would listen to these old fools, and they hadn't had a drink for I don't know how long. And I just didn't want a thing that they had. But these other people, that they were just different, and I responded to it. You know, I needed to get a sponsor, somebody that would just encourage me and inspire me to get off my ass and get to the door and greet people and to help people. And when I did that, my life changed around. You know, because I had to take actions. I had to do things which seemed irrelevant. You know, my sponsor would tell me to do things. And it just seemed irrelevant to the problem I had. My problem was always the girlfriend. It was always something else. And I would whine on it. And he would tell me to go and work with newcomers. You know, why did I want to work with a newcomer? You know, what? You know, bless you, lad. Have your stories moved me deeply? Have you read your big book? You know, he was horrible. He got me taking action. He got me doing things which changes a twisted alcoholic like me, and just somehow gives me enough humility to be able to live a life sober and actually enjoy sobriety. Just by taking these actions, which, you know, I couldn't work out. There was no way I could work these things out. I just had to take the action. So if you're new, or if you've been around a while and things are not quite as good, or you're concerned, just take the actions. You know, these things work. They've been consistently in my life for a considerable period of time. And I've been able to stay sober. You know, I've over the years, I've seen people who are far more intelligent than me. I've seen people who are better speakers than me, and you're going to hear another six tonight. I've seen people who are wealthier than me, more successful businessmen than me, just nicer people. Most of them are drunk, but I'm still here. And the only reason that is because through good and bad, through thick and thin, even when I've not wanted to, I've turned up at my home group and I've taken the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've continued to do those things which originally brought me to a place of comfort. Those are the, I mean, it's just magic for an alcoholic like me. You know, I just have to do these very simple things and I can have a good life. So it's really great to see everybody here. There's a lot of faces I've not seen for a little while, and you know, some people I'd rather not see, but it's just a wonderful thing. You know, I mean, people used to say, I mean, over the years, I mean, this group, I mean, it's the group's 20th birthday, so happy birthday, Road to Recovery, because yeah, we were called the Magnificent Seven. You know, we've been called a cult. We've been called the Magic Circle. We've been called clones. You know, we're only good for newcomers. What? You know? We're of the world. We're not of the spirit. All this shit I've heard over the years. But let me tell you something. For 20 years, this group, week in, week out, has been here helping people. And there are not very many groups that can do that. So we're doing something right. So just continue to do it. You know, I've just got to try to turn up week in, week out, and just be the best example of Alcoholics Anonymous that I can be. And that's not always been a very good one. I just got to try to do the best I can, just turn up, try and help people, and don't worry about what's new, cool, and trendy. Forget all that crap. Just do what we've always done. Just keep walking the road. And what about all this, you know, I mean, some of the shit I hear, you know, am I swearing? All this stuff I hear, you know, all this new, you know, you hear stuff, this is the new thing this week. Then there's next month, there's, you know, it's real meditation for real alcoholics. Next week it's, I've got to have an awakening. All this, just take the actions. Just do the things we've always done. And if we continue to take the actions, this will remain a great place to be for many, many more years to come. And thank you very much.
My name's Rico. I'm alcoholic. I noticed I'm the only one from the Road to Recovery, Bournemouth. So best do a good job or they're going to kick my ass, I think. Happy birthday, Road to Recovery, Plymouth. I came to AA 15 years ago from the streets. I'm a tramp. I'm a liar. I'm a thief. I love alcohol more than anything on this planet, more than my children, more than anything. It's that important to me. I've never found anything on this planet that does what alcohol does for me. In this speed, alcohol does it. And I'm not 15 years sober. I came here 15 years ago in that condition. I'd just been on the streets for 2 years, sleeping in doorways. And I saw myself in the window of a shop, and I was disgusted what I saw. It was pitiful. I had a blanket wrapped around me with a big old beard. And not even a skin full of alcohol in me could let me bluff it any longer and say, so I wanna be. You know, it was disgusting. And I vowed then to start doing something about it. And I kind of did. I went to do a robbery, got arrested by a police officer that knew me. And he recognized me when I gave him my name, and he said, what's happened? He knew me as a little boy. And rather than take me to the jail, he took me to a psychiatric unit and started me on this journey towards AA. But it was a rehab and all that then. So I spent 5 years. I did rehab. Didn't take it seriously. And I did AA, and I did what Wayne said, actually. Just came and did jack shit. And if you're new, don't waste your time. Just come in here and sitting in this room, because all you're doing is sitting in a seat in a room. That's it. And if that chair could keep me sober, I'd take the chair home with me. I've discovered it doesn't. 10 years ago, I met somebody who was sponsored from this meeting, and I disliked him immensely. And I met some who were sponsored from this meeting in Bournemouth, and I knew him from a long time ago. And they talked to me, and I could see something had happened to him. And they took me to a whole meeting of them, you know. And if you can imagine it, the meeting was quite new at the time. There were 7 of them, and I was the only newcomer. It was horrible. I was surrounded, and I put my newcomer face on. I'm still drunk at this point, and I put my newcomer face on and smiled when they said, "What do you think of the meeting?" And they said, "Oh, I loved it." And I want to get out of there, because these people make me uncomfortable. What I didn't realize at the time is I'm uncomfortable wherever I am. I just blamed it on these people at this particular time, because that's where I am, and they're telling me the truth, and I don't want to hear it. They're telling me stuff about a physical allergy, that when I take one drink, I've got no choice as to whether I'm taking another. I'm taking more because my body demands it, beyond my mental control or reasoning. And they told me this stuff, and it scared me. It sent me into despair, to be honest. You know, people say, "I read the book," and I read Step One, and I thought, "Oh, fantastic." I thought, "Shit, I'm done. I can't. If this is true, and it's me that I suffer from the physical allergy, the mental obsession, that I can think of nothing else, or it lies to myself and say, I've had a month off, I'll have just take one night off. If I believe this information, I'm in big trouble." And I believed it. And I said to him, "What am I to do?" And they said, "You get a sponsor. You buy yourself the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You get yourself a home group. You commit to it. And do whatever you can to make that meeting run correctly. And get involved with meeting newcomers and helping, welcoming people." And after some debate, I finally had finished, and I got on with it. And that was 10 years ago. New Year's Day, I'm going to be 10 years. And I've took this 12 steps, had a spiritual experience. My life has absolutely changed. I've gone from being a tramp to, I live on a clifftop, about 100 meters from the sea. I've got a wife. I've got some beautiful children. I've got 2 children back in my life that I abandoned for 15 years that the steps put me back together with. 15 years they didn't see me, and now they don't leave me alone, you know. Both of them, they're 21 and 26 this year, and they're both pregnant. I'm going to be a grandfather. And the first person they contact when they have a scan is me. Yeah, it's absolutely, the steps has absolutely washed it away. And I couldn't have believed it was going to happen. I'm the best dad I can be to my children. I've been part of the same home group and had the same sponsor for 10 years. And some of the finest people in my life come from that meeting, you know. I'd do anything for some of these people. And I'm pretty damn sure they'd do anything for me. Now, I don't know about you lot, but I didn't find that out there, you know. And I tried, don't get me wrong, I really tried to stop drinking and do like my mum says, you need to stop a drink. She's Italian, by the way. Stop a drink, you need to get a job, find a nice girl and buy a house. I wanted to scream at her, I wish I could do this, but I can't. And it was strange, if you're new and you've got a sponsor saying, "Don't worry about those problems over there. Have you read your book today? Why are you not at the meeting at 6:30? You know, have you phoned 2 new people today? You know, have you written a gratitude list? Why are you checking in late? If you've got a sponsor saying things like this to you, they seem to have nothing to do with your problems. Let me tell you now, they have everything to do with your problems. And it makes absolutely no sense. And on page 13 of the Big Book, I think it's 13, it says uncommon sense. Common sense becomes uncommon sense. Because if I concentrate on these daily suggestions, these daily spiritual actions Wayne was talking about, what I think's my problem over here seems to start taking care of itself. Because unbeknown to me, I get here and half of the things I really worry about aren't a problem. And they're going to disappear anyway. You know, and I soon found, as soon as I started taking the next right action, and just trying, not being a spiritual being or anything, just trying to live right, everything seemed to fall into place. I started to feel good about myself, you know. I started enjoying being on this planet amongst yous. And I've grown up, you know. And I thought, growing up, you know, all I ever really wanted to do was play. You know, I loved playing as a kid, you know, and I kind of, when it's time to grow up, I just want to carry on playing, you know. My toys just got different, and alcohol allowed me to do that. And once that was taken away, what the hell was I going to do? If you're new and you recognize some of this stuff, and not only that, that you recognize when you put alcohol down, I should be okay now. You know, the booze, which is my problem, seems to be out of the way. Yet there's something wrong with me, you know. Welcome. That's alcoholism for you. Or that's how my alcoholism shows up. It doesn't really show up until I try to stop. You know, everybody knows you're going to have problems falling over drunk. That's obvious. You know, the baffling part was knowing that I've got problems sober. And they appear to be worse. You know. And the only solution I found is, you know, as boring as it's going to sound, getting a sponsor, getting yourself a home group, truly committing to it like you've never committed to nothing in your life. You know, taking the daily spiritual actions and just throwing your whole life into it, because, you know, it sounds crap if you're new, but look at my life from a tramp to what I've got now. If I'd have known that back then, and if you knew what's to come for you if you recover, you'd be on fire with it. You'd be ripping the next suggestion right off your sponsor and doing it. Do you know what I mean? I've had my 2 minute light, so I'm about to shut up. But very grateful to be here. I hope I've done the Bournemouth group proud. And now I'm being told to stop, so I'm going to sit down.
My name's George, I'm an alcoholic. And it's a wonderful privilege to be able to share at this group. I owe everything in my life, everything good, to Alcoholics Anonymous. And all I've really done for that really is acted on the information, as Wayne was saying, acted on the information that I heard in this room. And I have a life today beyond what I could have imagined. And this is me, I mean, left to my own devices, I am a complete failure in every aspect of my life, and I would never have believed it. You know, growing up, I would never aspire to kind of standing up here and speaking in front of you people. I would have it's just terrible. But growing up, I there seemed to be some sort of barrier between me and everyone else. There was kind of you, and then there was me, and I always felt this anxious apartness from everyone else. And I remember one of my earliest memories of drinking. I've shared this recently, and some guys would have heard this, but I don't really care. You know, I've learned less to care about what other people think through this program. We stole a bottle of drink, my earliest memory, and had a few slugs, and it did something for me. It transformed me internally from this kind of shy, nervous wreck into what I thought was kind of James Bond. You know, I could suddenly talk to girls, and we were with these girls in an abandoned building, and kind of my arm would go up around her and I'd pull her in closely. I was cracking jokes, and then all of a sudden I just throw up all over her. You know, and that's kind of sums up my drinking, really. The fact that I just always took it a step too far. And if that was only my problem, I would have been all right. You know, so you see, when I could reel myself in at times and say, right, that was a bit too much, I've really got to stop drinking. And when I did that, it was a bit like holding my breath. You know, my life would become very, very difficult. The kind of the oil in my brain would kind of cease working, and things would kind of just seize up and grind up, and I seemed to suffer from this kind of low-level depression that would just eat away at me. My employer was just always so demanding, and I just hated the place where I lived, and if only I didn't have a girlfriend, that was always the problem. And then when I was single, I was so lonely, you know, and whatever seemed to happen in my life, I would always go back to drinking, and I could give myself no explanation for it. I would have traded every single thing in my life for that ease and comfort that drink gave me. That feeling that alcohol once produced that I tried to chase, I would have traded everything, and I did. I lost relationships, I lost jobs, and in the end, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and realized that I'm not like you. That's what I believed. I thought, I am not like you people, because when I stop drinking, my problems begin. And I was working in psychiatry at the time and thought that lack of sunshine was my dilemma. I thought, if I just get out of this country, I'll be all right. You know, and I went off to Portugal, and 2 years later, I was sitting baffled and confused and broken, but with a suntan, you know, and nothing changed. And I came back home and tried to detox, and by this time, my father was in AA, and even worse, my mother was in Al-Anon. That really, yeah, just threw a spanner in the works with my drinking, and I said to him, this time, I mean business. I mean, I meant business for the 2 years before. I had been going to meetings through this time. I'd been kind of sharing, as has been mentioned, and my life changed. It got progressively worse over a period of time, you know, through just attending meetings and doing nothing. And this time I meant business, and they went on holiday for 2 weeks, and I emptied their bank account and drank again. And at that point, I thought before they got back, it would be a good time to get into rehab. So off I went, spent 6 months kind of talking about me and my problems and how I felt and what I thought of you. And at the end of that, I got discharged. I was unresponsive to conventional therapy. And that was my last hope, the fact that you people could fix me, you know, in the therapy. And I thought, what is there now? And I remembered a message of hope, a message of depth and weight that was shared in a meeting just like this, and I thought, maybe, just maybe for someone like me, there might be hope. And so it was kind of a toss-up between killing myself and going and kind of getting a sponsor and going and do the steps. And I thought long and hard about this. It was a tough call, and I was out of options. So I thought, I'll tell you what, we have compromise. I'll do it for 6 months, and if it doesn't work out, I'll shoot myself. Because I tried everything, and the only thing worse that I could think of than drinking again was kind of living that way that I've been living for another 10 years. I would have just killed myself. So, you know, I went to this group, and I got a sponsor, and he gave me the most ridiculous things to do. You know, getting on my knees, phoning up a couple of new people, being on time and early for my home group. And I thought, this is a joke, you know, this really is not going to solve my problems, you know. And I remember phoning him up about a week into it and telling him, you're complaining about something or the other. He says, yeah, do twice as much. And I thought, it just became very apparent he wasn't listening to my problems here. And, you know, I said it again and said, yeah, do twice. And I thought, I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm going to prove you, for people like me, this does not work. So I did four times as much. You know, I was going to, wore out my knees through praying so much. Lo and behold, it changed my perception. That nagging feeling that wouldn't it be nice just to have a couple of drinks has left. And that has not returned in the last 8 years. More than that, you know, going through the process of the steps was just a phenomenal, phenomenal process. It gave me such freedom from self, you know, confidence. That ease and comfort that I sought all my life, I found through the process of the 12 steps and continue to enjoy to this day. You know, I was told to get to meetings early and shake everyone's hand. And I thought, well, what about me? I'm new. You know, people should be coming to me. But regardless of what I thought or how I felt, I just acted in accordance with what my sponsor said. Amazing things happened. Just at the point I got my sponsor, I went to the doctor and they signed me off sick for 2 years. I mean, that's my mental state when I don't drink. That's 6 months sober. 7 months later, I was working for the very organisation that signed me off sick as a result of, you know, continuously turning up at my home group on time, getting involved in service, and all the rest of it. And wonderful things have happened. I met my now fiancée at that time, and we moved over to Germany. And I remember getting involved in AA over there and thought, well, it's continental Europe, a bit more relaxed. Maybe I don't need to do so much over here. I've got no sponsor, you know, no home group, and just kind of kick back a bit. And, open myself up to a world of pain and misery. I feel so grateful, really, that I'm in the position that I am. I could share about the gifts of this program from now until tomorrow, and none of it is of my doing. As has been mentioned, I've just put this program first in my life, and every single thing else has taken care of itself. You know, the principles of the steps and the traditions in my work, and everything has just taken off. It's just taken off, and I would never have chosen this life. I would never have believed it. And if you're sitting in this room tonight and you're thinking, well, you know, I'm not sure. I sat in meetings for years suffering with alcoholism, and all I needed to do was just ask someone to help me and do precisely what they'd done. And I can't believe it. I can't believe that this wonderful journey has happened to me, and I'm sure if you're new tonight, it can happen for you too. I'll leave it there. Thanks.
Thank you to our first three speakers. Tonight's final four speakers will be Chris from France, Robert from London, Matt from Australia, and Alexis.
My name is Chris and I'm an alcoholic. My sponsor said, don't spend too much time thinking about reminiscing about the old time and bring it back today. So I'm going to do completely the opposite and I'm going to reminisce a little bit. Yeah. We call this group the Road to Recovery. It's a road to somewhere. It's not going nowhere, it's going to recovery. I stand in front of you today and I today am recovered. I have no desire to pick up a bottle of drink. I actually have no bad feeling to any human being today. And so today I'm recovered. And what did I have to do to get there? Well, I lived in Plymouth bus station. Now, that was my home. And there was this kind of, you know, Wayne talked about the insanity. That, you know, of going and doing the same thing again and again and again and again and expecting different results. Well, you see, I think it's deeper than that. I think back then, my insanity, there used to be the Samaritans would come round. It was January. It was cold. And they would give us blankets. Right? I would thank them and be nice to them. I would lose the blanket. I would then blame it on them. I would say, your life is a waste of time. I would shout at them, going, you're useless human beings. You're pointless. The only way to live life is my way. And I was cold in Plymouth bus station. So finally, when I was on my knees, I went to meetings. And I heard about these meetings. I had four sponsors. And the reason I chose them was I identified with how much they wanted to drink. That's what I identified with. Nothing else, just that they really wanted to drink. I'm like, yeah, I'm like that. I really, really, really want to get out of it. And so I took them on as sponsors. All four died an alcoholic. And it was somebody who isn't here today, which, you know, I pray that he was here today. But he came and he said, I found this group of people. And they were a group of people, and they're called the Joys of Recovery. And I was told by the other people in the fellowship that they were the crazies. Don't go anywhere near them. But this friend of mine who I'd come to bond with in the fellowship, he said, Chris, come with me to this group. And I went, and I was desperate, but I also wanted to, because I had these voices going, the Joys of Recovery are extremists. They're like at the extreme end of this. And that's the attitude I came into the meeting with. I didn't leave with that attitude. They were the first group of people to actually see that I had an opinion on all the steps and all the traditions, but they realized I couldn't read. So all my opinions was not informed. I was not informed of how to get well. I wasn't informed of that. I didn't get it. I got that from anybody I heard it from. I grabbed it. But I wasn't informed with the facts. The facts are written down. This group, they came round. I was still living at the bus station. And then they came round and they taught me how to read. Page by page by page of the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now that to me blew me away. Just their action. You know? Did I like these people? Did I respect them? Do you know, I didn't care. You know, I really didn't care. These people were actually giving me facts, and I just identified. I didn't understand what I was doing when I was asked to do it. I rebelled against it as best I could, but in the end, you know, it was before the time of the internet, before the time of too many mobile phones, you know, so arranged times had to be made to make telephone calls. My sponsor was simple. You know, if I answered the telephone and I started ranting on about myself and how crap it all was, he would say, why don't you call me when you've done your suggestions? And he would hang up. Now, today, you know, my sponsees will tell me, they go, you're a bit harsh, Chris. Do you know, I've heard of other sponsors who sponsor in a different way. And I go, I can only give you what was given to me. I was not sold short, half-heartedly short. I was told you are an alcoholic and you're going to die, or you're going to end up in an institution for the rest of your life. And I knew it. I knew they were right. And they did not sell me short. They didn't pat me on the back. You know, they just hung up. Why should I waste my time with you if you're not following these suggestions? So I followed them. And crazy things happened. Crazy things happened. And you've done a wonderful little 20-year anniversary book there, and I just had a quick little glance at it. And it talked about the joys of recovery, and it talked about we got there early. We got there early because we were so frightened, you know, that we could not stay sober on our own. The unity that brought us there, and that bit of service, for me, was my life. I loved it. I love that I could sit outside 2 hours before the meeting, and basically we'd just be taking the piss out of the meeting, you know, but we would be sat there for 2 hours beforehand. We would then get in there, we would move the chairs around, and we would put everything out, we'd make a cup of tea and that. I loved that. For me, I loved that. That was the first thing of structure in my life ever. Ever. So from there, I followed these suggestions. I got some understanding, and I did these steps. And yes, I lied, and I had to go back and do them again, a bit more honesty. I knew nothing of how to be honest. You know, my idea of being honesty was, you know, well, I tell little half-truths. You know, they won't hurt anyone. It did. I had to be brutally honest about where I was, who I was, you know, or how little I knew, actually. Yeah, and one of the things that my sponsor said to me, which really threw me, he said, Chris, you know nothing worth knowing. to someone like me, who is full of themselves, I am so self-centered and so bigged up ego, What, I know nothing? I know stuff. You know, I know music, I know this and the other, I must know something. And he's going, you know nothing worth knowing. And I'm racking my brain thinking, I must know something, you know. I really must know something worth knowing. And I actually surrendered to the fact that I knew nothing worth knowing. But what did that leave me? Right, this, I started this, it's a road to recovery. What did this leave me? This led to the widest road that you can imagine, where I could learn stuff that was useful. I could learn stuff which actually isn't just good for me, it's been good for everybody I've come into contact with. Yeah. Now, as fate sometimes has, just when I got asked to do this share, I read an article from an artist, and she works in kind of ceramics and sculpture, and she's 108 years old. And she was asked about her work, and she said something which I thought was very profound for this meeting. She said, my mistakes make great pebbles to build a road. And I thought of you lot. That's what I thought of. I thought, that's beautiful. It's a 108-year-old woman saying that. It's nothing to do with us at all. And I thought, that's it. We all have made mistakes. The mistakes to get this down, the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous down, the mistakes they've made were horrendous. But what a road. What a roadmap. You know, we've got signposts that are so big and so blatantly obvious, you know, that you can't miss them. You cannot miss them. Yeah? And the beautiful thing about a group is it takes those signposts from just being static signposts to a human being, just like you, saying, my life has changed. I've changed. I'm not angry, I'm not resentful, I'm not greedy. These things have gone. They've been lifted. And they've lifted, and the beautiful thing, you know, as I have as many friends outside of the fellowship as I have inside the fellowship, which is a beautiful thing for me to say, you know. And the thing that I have really found is the only problem is when I put myself in the way of doing good stuff. That's all it is. If I put myself in the way and I start thinking about me, 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 or I want, I want, I want, I can't be helpful. Why? Because I'm actually useless without connection to a higher power and that being the core of my life. And that stuff, you know, that spiritual stuff. I got told that God was just dog spelt backwards. And I've hung on to that ever since. And so I'm comfortable with that word. But I did use it as an excuse of why not to listen for a very long time. But now I know that this is the spiritual aspect of this program. Thank you. The spiritual aspect of this program is core. And it starts with me being willing to do action. Spirituality is action, not just thinking. My thinking, not so good. My actions, if I do good stuff, good stuff happens. And thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Hello, everyone. My name's Rob. I'm an alcoholic. And I just want to say, first of all, I want to express some real heartfelt gratitude for being asked. I can't think of many other places where anyone would let me anywhere near a lectern to speak to anyone, so thanks a lot for trusting me with this, and I take it very seriously. Hopefully I try not to take myself so seriously. I hope you laugh at some of my foolishness. It's if it's not world-class foolishness, it's certainly Champions League. Like, you know, it's pretty good, you know, and all I can say is that I just share, I mean, everyone's covered it quite masterfully, but all I can say is that, you know, from the very first time I remember having my first drink, I felt like I arrived, you know, I felt like I'd arrived, I felt like I was on the firing line at life at last, I felt like I'd become someone. What had actually happened, very similar to everyone else, I'd stolen a bottle of brandy from my mate's dad's drinks cabinet, I drunk it and I jumped out of a window in my pants, you know what I mean, and that was about as social and as positive and as my drinking ever got, you know, and Do you know what I mean? But I thought I'd arrived. Where I'd actually arrived was in the garden, but, you know, I'd arrived. I'm a man, you know, and I proceeded to dedicate myself to drinking with a determination, with an enthusiasm, with an intelligence, with a drive that I did not show in any other area of my life. You know, I dropped out of school. I was depressed, man. You know, I was depressed. But I was, you know, if my mates were meeting up to drink cider on a bit of waste ground, I would be there early. Promise you. You know, I can see where the idea of getting there an hour early comes from. I already did it. I would be there early. And I'd probably already be drunk. You know what I mean? I was taking this stuff seriously. And I remember, you know, for example, I mean, I won't go into too much because I don't have too much of a drinking story, but essentially, you know, I remember, I'd overcome my fear of getting ID'd to buy drink because I just thought, I can't be around you people without drink. I can't be around, this is happening, this is important, you know? Anyway, so basically I progressed, I moved on into university, and the wheels promptly fell off. You know, when parental domination was removed and that last bit of structure, that last bit of discipline, you know. And very similar to, you know, George, I'd managed to blag this girl that was some sort of James Bond-esque character, and she'd seen right through it and seen to the fact that I was an alcoholic of the hopeless variety, very near a rock bottom, do you know what I mean? And she didn't really want to be involved in that, and I don't blame her, do you know what I mean? But, you know, some of the particularly painful things that stick with me are, rolling around on the floor, crying, saying I've changed. You know what I mean? You know, and bit awkward now. I think I even said at one point. I've been marooned on your shores of your heartless indifference. You know, I was a bit wordy, a bit grandiose. You know, and bless her. You know, and she just was like, oh. And sorry. And now credit, I bless that woman. I credit her with the pain that provided me with a spiritual kick to get me into this way of living. And but I'm still lazy, and I'm still wasn't hurt enough, and I rocked up to a seaside town, and was going to eight meetings a week, and I was doing key working sessions, I was having group therapy, you know, I was sharing my stuff, man, you know, and I'd come into meetings and I'd just process my day, and I'd give it a good 15, 20 minutes, and people would be like, and it's a small fellowship, and people still remember me down there of being like, oh my God, and you know, my ex-girlfriend was called Cassie, and somebody called her Lassie in the meeting because I was going, and it was excruciating for everyone and me. But I didn't, and I actually also as well, I remember at this point, I remember nobody'd asked me to sponsor them, you know, at this point. I was like, why not? What, don't they want what I've got? I didn't want what I had. Do you know what I mean? But they, you know what I mean? But, you know. And another memory that sticks in the mind quite clearly as well about AA at that point is that I went back to my old, well, there's a few things. I went back to my old treatment center, you know, and I graduated, you know, I was supposed to be this really, you know, and I was so wrapped up in myself I didn't notice it, but people told me afterwards that the whole ground floor would clear and everyone would rush upstairs because they just didn't want to listen to the stream of consciousness of self-pity and misery that was spewing from my mouth. But I just couldn't see it, you know, they'd be like, how are you? And they'd be like, oh, it's tough, man. It's tough out there, you know, the DHSS want me to get a job, I'm not ready, man, you know, I'm chemically dependent, you know, and it's hard, and, you know, I'm thinking about doing all this and that, and everyone's just like, what? And then just, and you know, of course, and I didn't want what I had, you know, I mean, I really didn't want what I had, but I didn't know any other way of being, I just did, you know, and this is the thing that has really opened my eyes about alcoholism, is that, you know, you take alcohol out of me, and I get worse, you know what I mean, that's the real, you know, think of this situation, you know, I get worse, I don't get better, I'm having problems with my emotional nature, you know, I'm the sort of guy that, you know, would have, give it the big un, and then the police turn up and I'll have a cry, do you know what I mean, it's not a good look, I'm no type of criminal or gangster or anything, I'm just a bit of an idiot, a bit of a pain in everyone's side, just a bit of a nightmare, do you know what I mean, everyone's just a bit awkward, and like, oh God, and even the policeman, you know, the policeman's going, there, mate, you know, don't worry, do you know what I mean, just... What? You know, what, you know, and my experience, humble experience is that if I'm not careful and I'm not really trudging this road really dedicatedly, I can still be like that. You know, that's the real thing. You know, please don't think of any way of me being a saint. I'm sure you don't think, but I'm not a saint. I'm no way. But what I just have is a humble experience of applying the principles of this stuff in my life and the benefits and the fruits that come from that, you know. I remember thinking that discipline was for the weak and the boring and the sad and the people who'd given up on life, you know, and I remember mocking my father because he had a military background and we used to have bedroom inspections, and that was what I used to think, you know, discipline was, and it's boring, and you know, you basically, and I'm sorry if anyone's wearing corduroys, but you basically put your cordials on and just be a middle-class loser. That's just, there's no point in discipline. It's pointless, you know. And actually, everything in my life has come, all the fruits of my life have come from some discipline. You know what I mean? So it just shows you what I think I know is completely not right. It's just completely wrong. You know, everything of value in my life has required a bit of action, has required a bit of work, but the benefits and the fruits of it have been absolutely astounding. You know, I'm not perfect, but there's moments there where I have real joy. You know, I have real unchemically adulterated, you know, no chemicals involved, just real peace of mind and happiness. You know, just real peace of mind and happiness. And the thought and obsession of having a drink has been lifted from me. And I can assure you that when I first came to AA, that's all I could think about. That's all I could think about was a drink. You know, I'd be gutted that I would end up in Weymouth and it had more pubs per capita or whatever, all this, and I just couldn't get it out of my head. And now I very rarely ever, if ever, think about having a drink, you know, and I've been relieved from the bondage itself, and it's just exactly what everyone has shared. And I love the way that in this fantastically enthusiastic expression of AA, everyone just talks about what they're doing, because that has been, it's been my actions that's been absolutely the key to any sort of contented sobriety and any sort of recovery and any sort of joy, you know. My sponsor's very similar. I mean, I have to, you know, if I'm sponsoring someone, I have to be very similar myself, you know. I wasn't working at the time, and he'd hang up on me. He definitely would, or he wouldn't answer. And I'd be like, what? Why dare he? You know, but you know, he's a busy man. He's got life, you know, and I'm being selfish, and he's indulging me, and that's not good for me. It's allowing me to be insincere, which is causing me more harm than good, you know. And so what I think I'm trying to say is the principles and the values held in the Road to Recovery, particularly AA as a whole, is some of the things that have, thank you, has set me free. You know, set me free, has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. I was promised that when I came here, and I genuinely do have a life beyond my wildest dreams. And yes, I work, I've got a job, and I've got a girlfriend, and I've had a girlfriend for longer than I've ever had, you know, almost in my life. But the things that of true key value is the peace of mind, the freedom from the bondage of self, and the difference, this might sound airy-fairy, but it's not, the difference between fellowship of the Spirit and spirit of fellowship, you know, and it's the fellowship of the Spirit is where I want to be, you know, where we're all part of a common solution that we can absolutely agree on, walking hand in hand, you know, and if those words aren't jumping off the page at you and you're not living that stuff, then come and ask us what we're doing, and we'll show you, because it helps us as well, you know. If that sounds like airy-fairy nonsense, come and see us, and you'll see that it's absolutely hard-won, beautiful experience, and I'll leave it there. Thank you very much. Thank you.
G'day, my name's Matt. I'm an alcoholic. And, yeah, what a thrill to be here. Yeah, great meeting, great occasion for celebration, 20 years, happy birthday, Road to Recovery. And yeah, thank you for all the great work that you've done over the last years, because not only do I look around and see, yeah, a room full of, you know, real AA heroes and recovered alcoholics, but, you know, I've been privileged to see the spark, you know, spread all around the world and, you know, be part of Road to Recovery groups in Australia where, you know, Friday night, every night, week in, week out, this is the same thing. You know, we've got 30, 40, you know, members there now carrying the message, helping others. And now in Germany and seeing that fire start up again, it's just such a thrill to be a part of that. And thank you, really, on behalf of everyone else too. So, and this works. I mean, it's powerful stuff. It keeps a guy like me, like a hopeless alcoholic. It's not only am I sober, but I'm free. I'm living a life that is just is wonderful. You know, I'm able to just get stuck in and have a crack. You know, I have today a higher power in my life that deep down it just gives me that assurance that everything is going to be okay no matter what. And with a power like that working in my life, I just don't need to drink, or I don't need to take any mind or mood altering chemicals. I'm just okay with you, I'm okay with me, and it's priceless. And for that, you know, I owe you, you know, all the biggest thanks I can give. But yeah, you know, someone like me, when I first came to AA, I've heard, like, it was all a bit too much, you know, it was pretty full on. You know, I didn't want to be an alcoholic, and I certainly you know, had a lot of trouble, you know, accepting that. But I guess just from years of repeated experiences, I remember when I left my fifth rehab, and it dawned on me just how serious this is, and just how much trouble that I'm in. And I had that realization that, oh my God, I'm gonna drink myself to death, and there is nothing I can do about it. All I can do, you know, the best amount of willpower and strength that I can muster is I can just postpone it. I can just put it off for a couple of months, you know, but inevitably there will come a time and a place when I will drink again. And for me in the end, it was to drink is to die, because I just, a guy like me, like when I drink, I get that sensation that I've heard tonight, that ease and comfort. It does, it comes at once, but that's immediately followed by a phenomenon of craving that just compels me to keep drinking, you know, drinking beyond any kind of control I put up in front of that. Like my last days of my drinking, I would borrow my mum's car to drive to work where I worked in a bar, you know, as a controlling to not drink. You know, I've got the car, I can only have two drinks. Yeah, for some people that may work, but for a guy like me, it just doesn't. You know, I'll have those two drinks, I'll get that ease and comfort, but immediately it's just like, just one more, and I'll tell myself this, and you know, I'll think, well, I've got the car, so I'll drive home. So I'll drive home, but just when I'm about to get to my house, I'll go to the 24-hour pub and I'll have a few more beers there, and then, you know, I'd have this car, and it'd be this mental game where I'd just be trying to manage this alcohol that was just going out of control, and I would, just. It was crazy, and I would end up just buying all these beer bottles and filling the car up with beer bottles and just going home to finish the job, and every night was like that. You know, once I started, I could not stop, and you know, I'd begin to black out, where I would have periods where I wouldn't even remember like parts of the night, and that would just terrify me. Like I'd come to on the other side of town, you know, wearing no shirt with a shopping bag full of like corn chips, and just kind of. Just the horror of you know, coming to it, and it was horrible. But you know, once I got to that point where, yeah, it was like, that's it. I cannot drink again. But I can't not drink. You know, that was really, like George was saying, like, you know, if I could just leave alcohol alone and not drink, that would be it. The problem solved. But it's not. It's the beginning, and it's in those periods that I understand today that. You know, when I'm not drinking, that's when alcoholism just drives me insane. You know, I suffer terribly in sobriety. I suffer. You know, I get restless, I get irritable, I get discontent. I'm so resentful and just so angry and frustrated. And you know, if you just would just back off and just leave me alone, you know, like you just don't understand. And oh, it's just a horrible place. And I can't stand to live there, and when I'm like that, I just yearn. I just begin to yearn for escape. You know, I yearn to get out of myself. I yearn to once again just enjoy life or to get that ease and comfort. And everything I tried to get me that, it just didn't have the power, you know, the power to change that spiritual malady. I couldn't, you know, I tried counseling, I tried psychotherapy, psychoanalysts, psychiatrists, I tried medication, rehabs. You know, my mum did everything she could, all my mates did, and there was no human power that could bring about any lasting and effective change. And eventually I would go back to that drink, you know, and the pain and suffering, you know, I wouldn't even think of that. I'd just glorify that good bit and just tell myself that this time it'll be different. This time I'll be able to control and enjoy my drinking. And it's a false delusion, because there is no control. It's hopeless. 100% hopeless. But yeah, like I said, when I came into AA, I had that full knowledge of, there it is, man, I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety that's described in this big book. And I just knew how much trouble I was in. But thank God for AA, and thank God when I was at that point, you know, I'd done that step one. I'd thrown in the towel, I surrendered. There was no fight left. But immediately, you know, you guys just saved the day. You were there. You were at meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you were doing the 12-step work, and you went out and found me and brought me here and presented to me a way out, you know, a solution to my problem. And I just remember, yeah, being in a meeting and amongst a sea of misery, there was this beacon of hope, and it was, you know, to be my sponsor. And it was just, out of all the people you'd think that could help me, he'd be the last person. You know, he was a, you know, an electrician from London who was out backpacking in Australia. You know, he was only a year sober, yet this guy had everything that he needed to help me. He was an alcoholic of the hopeless variety, yet he had recovered. You know, he'd got a sponsor, and he'd worked the 12 steps, and he could pass that message on to me. And more importantly, like, this guy, not only did he present it, he lived it, and he was a demonstration of this program in action. Like, you could see that this guy had changed. Like, he had recovered, and he was on fire, and that enthusiasm and inspiration was enough to kind of just push me over the line and think, yeah, I'm just going to ask this guy for help. And asking for help was the hardest thing I ever done. But I just knew that there was something here, and I needed it. And if I didn't, I was going to die. So, you know, I just asked for help. And from that moment, I was never let down. I was just given clear, you know, precise directions on how to recover. You know, really simple stuff. Praying on my knees in the morning. You know, phoning to newcomers. Joining a home group and getting there early. Like, we've all heard it, and we're all practicing it here tonight. And what can I say? It's just worked. It's been a powerful, powerful solution to my problem. I mean, I stand here today. I'm 11 years sober. I'm on an amazing journey. Like, I can't begin. Like George was saying, going all night, just about all the cool stuff that's happened. But you know, I'm sober today. Yeah, traveling the world. I've you know, some of the things, like, I quit smoking. You know, I got off sickness benefits and got a job. I mean, that was a big day. and yeah, went to university and studied and graduated, and you know, got a girlfriend and just all of that normal life stuff. That's just, I'm seeming to be able to front up and give it a crack. And it's not always easy, by no means. You know, it's difficult. I've had some tremendous heartbreak and tough times. But that whole time, you know, I've just maintained that attitude of AA first. It's the central factor of my life, you know, revolving around solid sponsorship. Checking with my sponsor each and every week. I've got a home group that I'm there, you know. I'm there first, early, you know. I put this first. I take this very seriously because I know... what I'm up against, and I've just seemed to have done that, and I'm in with a shot, and I'm having a pretty good life. And it's yeah, what can I say? I mean, I think one of the biggest joys for me is not only has it happened in my life, but I've been around long enough to see it happen in others too, and to have played a small part. I remember when I came to oh, that's me done. So some other time, but it's just great to be here, and yeah, thanks again. Happy birthday.
I'm Alexis, I'm an alcoholic. And it's great to be speaking at my home group on the 20th anniversary night, and it's going to be a great weekend, and it's exciting to see the book at the back there. And it's been a long 20 years. I can't believe it. I was 23 when I got sober. I was 24 when we started this group. Don't worry, I won't bore you with a load of reminiscences, but you know, it's been 20 years of my life, you know. It's been, or 21 years actually, 21 years of my life. And it's quite odd. I wasn't expecting to think, oh, 20 years of the Road to Recovery group and suddenly link that in with my life, but it has. I was a kid when I came to AA. I feel like I was still a kid even when we started this group. I did want to say something for anyone that's new or visiting or whatever, and you're thinking, wow, they're making a big fuss. You know, why are you having a special thing for an AA group? Well, when I came to AA, I won't go into detail, but what I remember very clearly was the suffering and the tears of my family around me for years, and the people I really cared about and the pain I put them through and the suffering I went through. I remember vividly those mornings of the pain and the agony and the self-loathing again and again and again, just stretching out into this self-induced misery. I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I stayed sober, and so much of that has been made so much more easy by being in a group like this. And the other thing is, life isn't just about staying sober. It's about living life, and I'm surrounded by great examples of people who are living their life, who are getting out there using the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous to live a good, meaningful, exciting life. And that's meant a lot to me, you know, and I've looked at the example of people, and I've done it repeatedly, because, you know, if you're 12 years sober and thinking, what's next? I mean, when I was 12 years sober, I looked at the example of people around me in my home group, and it took me to the next level, both personally and professionally. When I was 15 years sober, the things that have happened in my life since I was 15 years sober, thanks to the examples that I've met in this group in Alcoholics Anonymous, are overwhelming. It's been that's the 12 steps got me sober. I was taken through the 12 steps by a sponsor. I have that same sponsor. Thank you, Wayne, for sponsoring me. I have that same sponsor, and that's, I'm a guy who is full of my natural state is to be full of conflicts, is to be, I remember when at work, my work's going so well at the moment, it's going so well, and I remember when at work, two years ago, all these idiots started turning up and sitting in the same lab as me. These people thought that just because they had the same boss as me, they could sit in the same room, the same, I'm going to start rambling actually, the point I'm trying to make is that my natural reaction to that is like, go away, I'm going to pretend you're not here, I'm going to walk in the morning, ignore you all, if you talk to me, blah, blah, blah. I'm a bit different to Chris, who's full of love after 23 years or whatever. I'm still a conflicted man, you know, and alcohol always used to release those conflicts. I don't have alcohol anymore. What I have is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the fact of being sponsored, and the fact of having a group like this, and it's hard to explain, but it's like there's this extra flywheel in me that's like going all the time. And nothing can deal with that energy apart from, it would appear, being very involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't matter how well I do at my job. It doesn't matter what happens in my personal life. There always seems to be this part of me that cannot be fulfilled by anything but Alcoholics Anonymous. And being a part of a group like this, you know, I talk about being a member of AA, and that's true, but, you know, AA is, what is it, they're 2.5 million people worldwide. I'm not a member of an organization. I can't imagine 2.5 million people. AA to me, and AA probably to the vast majority of people in the world, is their home group. It's the meetings they go to. So AA to me has been my home group. I mean, I go to intergroup and region and all that, but my heart is with my home group. And I used to kind of think, I'd go to the meeting and I'd think, wow, the buzz, you know, and I'd be there at the meeting and I'd be thinking, the buzz, this is brilliant, you know, and I get to have ribs afterwards. That was one of my big things when we first started the group. I'm actually going to have ribs tonight as well, so some things never change. I'd always be thinking, the buzz. Over the years, yes, I love the buzz, you know, and tonight is very special, but it's become more about, where can there be a place where I can give myself fully in service and be helpful and be involved, you know, and that keeps my interest and that's full of people who are trying to be involved and who are trying to do service, you know, for AA. And that's been, I can see now, one of the most important things for me, having a home group like this I'm here, you know, I come to a couple of the meetings of my home group a week, and I try and work with the newcomers that are here. I try and make people feel welcome. I try and make people who maybe aren't so comfortable with me feel more comfortable. I try and do all of these things, and not because that's the sort of person I am, but because that's the culture. That's what everyone around me is doing. That's what's expected here, and that does so much for me. It makes me a better person. It makes sobriety meaningful. It means I haven't gone through the last, I'll tell you what, 20 years, it is a long time. And if you're a self-sabotaging, conflicted person like me, you would have probably sabotaged your life, I don't know, maybe 10 times in the last 20 years. The only thing that's enabled me to keep all the gifts of sobriety, because the only thing that's enabled me to do that is the stability that I've found in Alcoholics Anonymous. The dealing with, I mean, I've said this before, and I think it can be taken too far, but one of the things about having a home group and sticking around my home group is that it teaches me to deal with, like, personal conflicts, with things that bug me about people. You know, AA, Bill Wilson called it a spiritual kindergarten. And, of course, I can't be part... Kindergartens aren't 2.5 million people big. Kindergartens are fairly small. My spiritual kindergarten is my home group. And I'm not going to run away, you know. And it was... I remember I almost ran away from AA 10 years ago. You know, I was, like, thinking, do I really need this? It's, do I really need... And that's normal for alcoholics. You know, I got to a point where I thought, do I really need AA to stay sober? And I see other people thinking, how important is it to stay sober? And I see them drinking. And that's one of the strangest things, actually, about being an alcoholic and knowing so many alcoholics and knowing so many recovered alcoholics and then seeing alcoholics who seem quite stable, and then they drift out of their home group, they drift out of AA, and they seem quite stable, and then something happens, and you can't quite put your finger on it, but then a year later, they've become a different person, or they're miserable, or you're worried they're going to die, or it's a very, you know, and I'm a, part of my job is science, and what I really want is, like, this kind of scientific proof. If you don't stay in AA, if you don't stay in your home group, if you don't stick with your sponsor, you're going to die. And here's the evidence. Here's the pie charts. That's the way my brain... Well, my first degree was in maths, you know, and that's the way my brain works. But that's not how I've learned things in AA. What I've done is I've kept some stability. I've stuck at it. You know, sponsorship is... They realise that. You know what I mean? They realised that way back decades ago in AA, how valuable sponsorship was. And this has helped me to stick around. And you gradually start to see what happens to people. And you can't quite see the pattern, but you see it. Not good things happen. And the other thing is my own personality. I keep on saying to you, I'm conflicted, I'm da-da-da. The truth is, I'm pretty comfortable with who I am. I'm a pretty happy person. I'm happy with my life, which really what that translates to is I'm pretty happy with myself because I improve every year. And that makes me, that makes me happy with myself. But for some reason, underneath that happiness, underneath that stability, underneath that satisfaction, I can still sense the part of me, the alcoholic, the part of me that made me drink, the part of me that the 12 steps keep in abeyance. And so I want to keep on doing this. I want to keep on living life because in the end, that's what it comes down to. I don't want to drink, I don't want to die, and I want to have a life worth living. And this is a life for me worth living. This is in my work life, in my personal life. This is 20 years in. We all know what it's like. You get sober in the first year and you're bouncing around like bloody Zebedee from the Magic Roundabout. That's normal. That's great. I was like that. I was that Zebedee. But this is what this program is. This is what the gift of sponsorship and home group helps do as well. 20 years on, recently I've been sitting down trying to do my morning gratitude list, and I'll stop just after I said this, and I've almost been overwhelmed about what to put on my gratitude list because there is still so much great about my life. It's been hard to know what to type, and he's about to rugby tackle me off the lectern, so I'll say thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.